Today on The Independent, Pete and I recap Notre Dame's new player offensive availability from this past Friday. We got to talk to Riley Leonard, CJ Carr, Lauren Landau, and tons of other new faces of the Irish's 2024 football program. That and more on today's episode of The Independent.
Welcome to The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. And Matt, as you said in the open, I feel like a new phase of the offseason has started. The winter conditioning program doesn't start until there's access to the players participating in winter conditioning, including the new strength coach, which we got last Friday. There will be a little bit more access this Friday to defensive players. But you have to start with the quarterback because that's football. And last Friday, we got our first chance to talk to Riley Leonard as Notre Dame's quarterback. I've talked to CJ Carr before, he was in as well. But I mean, your first impressions of Leonard, because immediately afterwards, it's natural to be like, huh, a little different than Sam Hartman. But I'm not sure what other takeaway I could have other than, wow, that's a little bit different than Sam Hartman.
Yeah, I don't think I'll go as harsh as our friend Tim O'Malley did in his musings this week when he wrote that there were, 100% related thoughts, unfortunately. Likeability factor for Riley Leonard off the charts. Ability to avoid road game turnovers and road to ignominious defeat, TBD. That being said, Riley Leonard was very impressive. I thought your column at The Athletic kind of hit the nail on the head. Like, he comes off as one of the guys, and that's what you need to succeed at a place like Notre Dame and probably at Duke and Wake Forest to some extent as well. I mean, they're all similar institutions, but you know, he was self-aware enough to walk right up and make sure we all saw him walking right up after the reports of his tightrope surgery, which were mostly accurate, and basically saying, wow, there are a lot more cameras and reporters here than I was used to dealing with at Duke. And he got into, you know, you get off the plane at South Bend Regional Airport and basically welcome to Notre Dame football. Like, that's what this town is kind of, you know, identified with in a way that the Triangle isn't, because you got so many other schools there as well. But he definitely had a likability factor. He had a been there, done that factor, but not in a arrogant kind of, you know, I'm here to show you way. I mean,
yeah, no.
Like, he's got to win the job too. Like, will, but like Steve Mangielli, if he carries himself the way he did during the one chance he had under the brightest lights of the Sun Bowl, there will be a decision to at least be made by the coaching staff. And I think we all know how that decision will go, but I wouldn't just snap my fingers and say, you know, that's it. I mean, let's not forget, this guy committed to Jared Parker. He'll now be playing for Mike Dembrock. Oh, by the way, he just had surgery after a season in which he missed the majority, well, pretty much the entire second half. So, yeah, I don't think it's boom, you're in, you're the starter, here we go. But I do think, at least publicly, he's approached things the right way.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty close to that, but there's not an air of presumption about him. I mean, I think one of Hartman sort of had like this, I don't know, like rock star vibe about him that like Notre Dame really played up, and it moved the needle. I mean, you think about where he was 4 weeks into the season, you're like, all right, this is the quarterback they've been waiting for. You know, and then obviously it all fell apart after that point. But, you know, you're in a situation with Leonard where he's still developing as a player. And I think some Notre Dame fans view that when I've written that he's a developmental passer, which is not my opinion as much as his former OC's opinion, Kevin Johns, who I talked to for a story on The Athletic. Like, that's sort of seen as a negative. I don't feel that way at all. I think being a finished product for Hartman was a negative. He did not improve when he was at Notre Dame as much as at the Senior Bowl. He talked about playing into different offense and leading a different group of guys. Maybe there's some intangible improvement there, some intangible benefits there. But I think with Leonard, he's got a ways to go as a passer. He knows that. I like that at the end, when he finally got a question just about football, he said, essentially, I don't even think he mentioned his strengths. He said, my weaknesses are obvious, or we all know what they are, something to that effect. And I think that is, you know, self-awareness and being comfortable in your own skin will take you, well, I don't know if it'll take you a long way, but if you don't have it at a place like Notre Dame, it will stop you from going a long way. And the fact that Leonard seems to have both of those, I think, is significant. Easy guy to interview, especially when he's undefeated. We'll see what happens, you know, when the rubber hits the road during the season. But I ran into a couple current players on campus just at random that night. I think I was going to like an indoor track meet. And we were just BSing for a second. I was like, hey, we talked to Riley for the first time today. And the response was like, he is perfect for us. Like, and it wasn't, and it, the player immediately said, like, that's not a slight on Sam. Like, he was good too. But like, Leonard just is just, you know, kind of has that one of the guy vibe about him. And I think that will play well in the locker room. I'll be curious to see, like, it's, you know, it's NIL and everything. If it's not on social media, it doesn't happen. But like the Under Armour shoes or the Beats headphones, like Leonard, I wonder how Leonard would react if he was asked to do that kind of stuff. If he'd just be like, you know, not my jam. There was one video clip where somebody said, like, every day feels like Christmas with Sam Hartman. Like, I don't know if another player would say that about Riley Leonard. I just don't know if he's as out there as Sam Hartman was last season.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, younger, obviously, less proven to an extent, and 20, 21 years old. Sam Hartman was 24. He's older than probably the guy starting the Super Bowl for the 49ers this week, and among other NFL quarterbacks. I did think it was noteworthy in the self-awareness department where when Riley Leonard did get asked about a football question, he said something to the effect of, and I have to go back and listen to the exact quote, but he said, like, I thought at this point I'd be in the NFL. I'm not. So yeah. Here we are, like, very matter-of-factly, not in a disappointing kind of tone, just kind of, all right, like, what do I got to do to get there? Also self-aware, said Howard Cross owes him dinner since he basically ended his season last year. I'm glad they could kiss and make up and be good teammates about it. But he did sing the praises of Notre Dame's defense throughout kind of the interviews with us and the process of looking at who was returning from this unit, because he thought that was probably the best unit he faced last year. You had a good story in The Athletic this week looking at snap counts and just how much is coming back on that side of the ball for Notre Dame, particularly in relation to the lack of experience on the offense side of ball. And that's secondary. I think we all knew how good it could be and how good they were last year. When you look at the number of snaps coming back that you articulated oh so well, along with Rod Hurd coming in from Northwestern, I mean, that 2 years in a row now, I think we're talking about a unit that for so long looked like the Achilles heel of that defense, really in position to be absolutely dominant, if not one of the best or the best, I think, in the country next year, if all goes well.
And that the snap counts, like, it only will tell you so much, right? Like, experience is quite valuable. That doesn't, like, but I would still rather have a freshman Kyle Hamilton to slot in there in the secondary, because, you know, talent wins at the end. But when you have a coaching staff who's together, you know, in theory, again, for a third year with Golden, Washington, Mickens, O'Leary, especially Golden, if you have a defensive coordinator who likes to get a little more complicated, then experience is a prerequisite for that. You can't get complicated with a freshman, no matter how talented they are, in my opinion. So, I mean, you look at the secondary, the snap counts were, as I was totaling them up, I was like, is that right? Because that almost seems like too many snaps. But last year they started the season with 4,792 snaps among like the starting five for their career, which is a ton. Ended up number one in the country in pass efficiency defense. It almost is like hard to figure out a way that you could have that many more snaps than that. And yet, if you go with Hurd, Jordan Clark, Benjamin Morrison, I think I went with Jaden Mickey, and then Xavier Watts, it'd be 7,020 snaps. Like, that's an insane number that almost would be impossible to recreate in college football again, because the COVID years are going away. But when you have that level of experience, Watts is a unanimous All-American. Morrison could play at an All-American level. The other three guys, I think, are capable college players, but probably not next level types. But man, they are going to know where to be at all times. And that in college football today, if you cannot make a mistake, odds are your opponent will. And what Notre Dame has back in the secondary, really the defense at large. I mean, they could be their defensive line, if I'm not mistaken, they will start four seniors up front, that including a sixth year, a fifth year, if it was RJ Oben. Linebackers. Oben is sixth. Cross six. Botello fifth. Mills fifth. Kaiser sixth at linebacker.
Five six-year guys probably starting on the defense.
Yeah, it's pretty much like, can you get Drake Bowen caught up to speed as your middle linebacker, which is important. I mean, I don't want to downplay that, but man, that is a hell of an old defense. And with a NFL defensive coordinator, they should be buttoned up at the very beginning of the season, which, as Riley Leonard is learning Mike Denbrock's offense, is probably a good time to be very buttoned up, because I don't think Mike Elko is going to have Texas A&M rolling on week one. But that, man, you're getting in a spot where you should have an incredible known quantity on defense out of the gate. And there are not a lot of teams that are going to be able to say that.
No, that was another funny line from Riley Leonard, where I said, I doubt when you picked Notre Dame, you were cognizant or really thinking about the fact that you'd be playing your former staff in week one. And he cut me off like, oh no, I know, I'm well aware. I was like, okay, game on. As if there wasn't enough intrigue with that one. But I mean, you had a line in your story, contextually speaking, Rod Hurd arrives at Notre Dame with almost 1,000 more career snaps than DJ Brown had entering last year, when Brown was a six-year senior and kind of the old head of that group. But again, five guys out of 11 starting who will be six-year seniors. I mean, Oben, Cross, Kaiser, three guys in the secondary.
Kaiser,
five, Oben, two guys in the secondary. Yeah, that's five. Yeah. Sorry.
Kaiser, Oben, Cross, and
Kaiser and Hurd. It's look at the teams that, short of the recruiting juggernauts of Alabama and Georgia, Michigan last year, just sound fundamentally, did not miss tackles, did not turn the ball over. Old guys who had been through battles together. I think when you look, at least on the defensive side of the ball with Notre Dame this coming year, there's no excuse to not be really, really good. And they already were really, really good last year. I think it's about taking that next step this year and finishing the job. And, when you're in those games, like Ohio State at the end, not letting it get to the point where you give up a 65-yard touchdown drive when your back's against the wall. There's a lot to be excited about with this group, especially with what looks like, again, it's February 6th. Things can always change, especially after the Super Bowl and with another Power 4 job open right now. But it looks like everyone's coming back, coaching-wise. On that side of the ball, which is exciting. I've seen Al Washington's name get thrown out for BC. I'd be surprised if they hired someone without head coaching experience for that job at this point. But, there's always possibility, I suppose. And also got to mention, maybe the newsiest thing that's happened since we last talked, even if it was non-news, technically, Chad Bodenstein after Michigan, very strong pursuit of him, which I believe would have carried a massive pay raise as well. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. Because you're keeping your talent and you're boxing out, a regional, if not national rival. You're doing it with a guy who, would have been a big loss if for no other reason than he's Marcus Freeman's right-hand man. And if that guy were to leave, it probably would have, a lot of people could have read certain things into that. But that's huge for the overall recruiting operation, because you look at the way they've operated the last year, particularly in the 2024 class with the relative lack of decommitments and just how sharp everything seemed to be. That's really, really big.
I agree. I think that their recruiting staff moves around all the time. Some of them are significant, some are not. I think Bowden would have been real significant. It's like you talk to, and over the years, I try to ask when I'm talking to prospects or their parents, which is, I'm not at the level of 24/7 or Rivals people, because that's not my jam. But when you bring up Chad, the players light up. The parents usually laugh. Sometimes they roll their eyes. And I say that as a compliment because I think Notre Dame, the institution and the staff, it's hard not to do a great job recruiting parents at Notre Dame. It is much harder to appeal to the kids themselves at a place like this. And Bowden does a really good job of putting himself out there. It's not just like getting the recruiting media to show up for photos and like, you know, you're dressed as a leprechaun or a referee or Secret Service agent. I think it was Jaden Greathouse. It was like, I'll shave my head if you commit. And he did. I asked Micah Gilbert.
Hey, join the pod.
Yeah, right. It's like his hair is very high end, so I think it came back quite quickly. But
I didn't know. Yeah, since I last seen him, I didn't notice.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a couple years. It was like a year ago at this point. But I remember talking to Micah Gilbert on Friday of last week and asked him a little bit about that or just sort of Bowden and sort of his approach. And he's like, yeah, he said he was going to jump in the lakes when we committed, and he hasn't followed through yet. So hopefully, that needs to happen in short order now that the weather's warming up a little bit. There was a kid, Jaden Lamar, who ended up flipping and going to Oregon at the end, but I was out in Seattle and went and visited him and asked him about Bowden. He was like, "Oh man, that's my guy." And they had a big official visit weekend where I think Bowden and another recruiting staff, it might have been Dre Brown, they showed up to South Bend Airport with like this boom box, and like they're welcoming the kids as they got off the plane. And I think the South Bend Regional Airport essentially was like, get the hell out of here. You at least need to move to the sidewalk, if not across the street. But like, the guy puts himself out there. He's not afraid to just sort of like make a scene. And I think that really resonates with these kids where it's like, this guy is all in on me and like is putting himself out there. And like, I think that really resonates with these kids. So he's sort of like Notre Dame's ace for making the kids feel comfortable and sort of into Notre Dame is like, oh, this place might be kind of cool.
Yeah. I think it's both of our years covering Notre Dame, I don't think we've ever heard anyone in the non-coaching division get kind of the glow up from recruits and parents and everyone the way he does. Right. I can't recall anyone in that.
I can't either.
Say there haven't been other valuable assets, but you know, he's certainly a unique bird in that regard. The other part, you know, and I say this complimentary, like them and every good organization, I think needs someone who's not afraid to piss on the fire hydrant and get people's, you know, ruffle people's feathers and push things maybe sometimes too far, but further than they're usually intended to go. And I think he's done a really good job of that. And I think the fact that he chose to stay over going to Michigan, the defending national champs, where he probably would have had even more free reign just because it's a new operation there, I think is pretty telling and shows what a success he and his operation have been so far. And, you know, I don't think he's staying unless he thinks the best is yet to come. And that's got to be encouraging if you're an Notre Dame fan.
Yeah, it feels, with Denbrock hiring, the Golden extension, Bowden retention, it feels like
Golden extension. Yeah, you keep like throwing that out there. And I still have it.
Like, it's there. It's been agreed upon. I think they're just waiting for the NFL.
Denbrock and LSU were agreed upon too.
Yeah, true. Fair point. But just like they're waiting for the NFL stuff to come and go, which is fine. But it just feels like Marcus is being backed in a way that like he couldn't ask for much more than this. And this, I got a question in my mailbag this week about that. Cause somebody was like, "Hey, I saw that Freeman was listed on a couple national writers lists for Alabama."
You know, I think it was one tweet Thamel, with like 20 names on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Pete Thamel. And then like, maybe I think Andy Staples might've referenced it. But the question was like, is Notre Dame dragging its feet on this? Are they maybe overcorrecting from the Charlie Weiss debacle of yesteryear? And I think they're adequately correcting for that. You know, it's like Marcus Freeman is 19-8. That's not the time to give a contract extension. However, it's always a good time to back your head coach with one great coordinator hire, one unprecedented coordinator extension and making sure your recruiting ace is taken care of. So that to me says more about Notre Dame's sort of faith in Marcus Freeman than a contract extension would, because that's not a contract extension doesn't change Marcus Freeman. Like, the great support staff around him makes him a better head coach. So that to me is much more relevant in the big picture.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a lot of different ways. I mean, I agree with you. I think there are a lot of different ways to look at it, right? Like, I don't, and this is like, again, a very unique tight needle to thread, but like, I don't look at Marcus Freeman as a flight risk / negotiator for anything other than Ohio State, if that were to open, for obvious reasons, because he's from there. He played there. That's the one where, if and when it were to open, I'd say, okay, what's Notre Dame going to do about it? Otherwise, I mean, look, Brian Kelly was extended after year two. He was 16-10, I believe, after his first 2 years. He also was taking over an absolute tire fire. And I think even if year three surprised all of us, everyone, including those in the building, you could see the elements, the infrastructure were getting set to build a sustainable, long-term, successful program, which he ultimately ended up doing. Marcus Freeman, 19-8. It's going to be interesting whenever that first loss, if it comes next year, comes, because that will be loss number 9. And I say that because Brian Kelly's final 5 years in Notre Dame, he was 54-9, which is even better than I remember it being. And I was doing the math and adding up some records this past week. I was like, wow, like, I knew he was good there. I forgot just how good he was. Not to say Marcus Freeman can't be better, but 19-8, you're going into year three. I mean, this is the year, is you alluded to in your mailbag, like, there's a mystique and aura around year three with Notre Dame coaches. Brian Kelly got asked about this enough times during that Charm 2012 run that, you know, he got tired of talking about it. Lou Holtz,
I'm tired of talking about his winning.
Yeah, it's there's something to it. I'm not saying they got to make the playoff and win this many games, but I think you'll know through year three whether this is Notre Dame's long-term guy or not. And the only, not that to say there's anything to suggest he wouldn't be, but he does have a new AD, he does have a new president. You never know what could happen in that regard. Although, again, I don't think Notre Dame's institutionally is a place that's going to be changed wildly by a new person in charge in either of those positions. I think everyone's much more deliberate and kind of on the same page when it comes to those kind of matters. But yeah, I don't think an extension is necessary right now. I assume he's got 3 more years left on his deal, so it would probably come after next year. And again, much like this year, which probably didn't go the way everyone hoped it would, there was still substantial progress. And I think you saw in the way the team rallied and rebounded around him after some potentially crushing defeats. You know, it's, there's no, there are no red flags. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, like, there's not.
Yeah, but it's
there's
like
nothing that gives me pause about them. That's not to say I think they're going to win a national championship within the next X number of years, but like, I think they're certainly on the right trajectory with them.
Yeah, I agree. Like, there are no red flags, but there are enough yellow flags that would be like, all right, let's wait one more year before we do the contract extension. I completely forgot Brian Kelly got a contract extension after year two, but his going 16-10 in his first 2 years is way more impressive when you remember what he was taking over.
It was. Now, I'll still, that year, that team in
2011 underachieved.
They had, like, they had more talent, I think, than the 2012 team. Now, they weren't nearly mature enough.
But, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, that team should have won at least 10 games.
Yeah, but this year, it's a prove-it year for Freeman. He's got all the material to do it. You know, the schedule is accommodating on top of that. You know, coordinators, quarterback, defensive experience, all of that stuff. This is a year where he can go out and earn an extension. And I think that he almost certainly will. So that's why I'm like, all right, you don't need to rush into a new deal here. Also, if you're Marcus Freeman, the terms of that extension after going, I don't know, let's say 11-1. Maybe they win a playoff game or two. They're going to be way more favorable than they would be now. Yes. So if Marcus Freeman was like, I don't want a contract extension, I want to bet on myself, I would respect that point of view on his part as well. The Ohio State thing, I don't know if there's a whole lot Notre Dame can do about that one way or the other. That just may be a personal decision on Freeman's
part. Right. I'm just saying that's the only, like, I don't think Marcus sees Alabama or USC or something up and say, hey, you know what? Let me get my agent on the phone. Maybe we can, like, I don't, the previous guy, I think so, but not this one.
Spring is around the corner, and that means it's time to get back outside with Roback, one of our favorite brands at The Independent. Whether it's polos, Q-zips, vests, crew necks, or hoodies, Roback is our go-to apparel when it comes to the golf course, gym, sitting around the fire, or even recording a podcast. You've seen Roback sponsor former Notre Dame athletes Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. And if you've attended a Notre Dame game, you've surely seen the Shamrock Polo around tailgates and in the stands. Roback goes by the motto, crave activity, and there's no better apparel to fit those needs. Listeners of The Independent can get 20% off your first purchase by using the promo code IRISH at roback.com. Again, that's 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more on your first order with the promo code IRISH. Visit roback.com.
You know, one thing, this is kind of on the topic of coaches moving around a little bit. You had something on the Inside Zone, and I know Notre Dame fans love to talk about Boston College as much as possible, but it is, it's interesting as, you know, I referenced Golden maybe going to the NFL. You know, we'll see what happens with Dylan McCullough as well, but just the idea that I think college coaches have, not all of them always, but like many of them have wanted to go to the NFL anyway for the last 5 years, but that may be more acutely felt now. And I, you know, when you see a power four sitting head coach decamp for a defensive coordinator role, when you see the Chip Kelly stuff bandied about maybe even, you know, a college OC job, I just, it was bizarre to me. What, and you're more plugged in on a national level than I am. Like, is this as bad as it's been to be a college head coach when the NFL is there? Or is this just like a weird moment in time? And like Halfley was an NFL guy. Chip Kelly was an NFL guy. It maybe makes more sense for them than it does for others. And they're both on the hot seat.
Both. Well, I mean, the college lifestyle is out of control. The calendar's out of control. Recruiting's out of control. And I don't say this to sound like an old man yelling at the cloud. Like I actually enjoy college as a consumer and someone who makes his money off covering this sport. Like the more chaos, the better. I enjoy it. Like, and I feel cleaner covering it and in the NIL era, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like it's a level playing field in that regard. Like the players have rights and can make money. That said, the fact that all this happened overnight, seemingly after the powers that be spent about 150 years and probably that many billions in legal fees trying to fight it all from happening, has created this confusion and chaos throughout the sport. And that's what's become unsustainable, I think, for a lot of people. Now, I think Jeff Halfley's a unique cat in the sense that he's got an NFL background. Boston College it's a power four job kind of in name only, right? Like it's one of the worst jobs in the ACC, which is one of the worst power four conferences. And you could spin his tenure there however you want it. He made 3 bowls in 4 years. He also had a sub 500 record. They came very close to being Florida State and Clemson multiple times. They ultimately didn't. He was, according to a lot of people, on the hot seat this year and barely coached his way off it. And oh, by the way, they open next year on Labor Day night at Florida State, which they're probably going to get killed no matter who's coaching them and who's playing quarterback for them. And that, if you're going into year five as Jeff Halfley, is going to be tough to overcome in the narrative department. Let's not forget, he's on his third AD in 4 years there. The previous two left for jobs that are now in the Big Ten at UCLA and Penn State. So it's a tough job. That's not to say it's impossible to win at. But if you're Jeff Halfley and you're making $3, maybe $4 million a year at Boston College and you're going to move to Green Bay, Wisconsin and make probably one or two, I don't know, but like, you're not going poor overnight and you're living in a place that's a lot easier to afford than suburban Boston is. And you do a really good job as a DC for one of the most famous franchises in the NFL. Who's to say you're not an NFL head coach in 2025, right? You're restarting your clock. And I think, you know, when you map it out from a math standpoint, it makes sense for him to do that, especially if he sees himself more as an NFL guy than a college guy. Now, again, big picture, is that indicting of college? Yes. Again, I don't think like Notre Dame is in danger of losing a coach to become a coordinator at the NFL, a head coach to become a coordinator at the NFL. No. I don't think Penn State or Alabama or anyone like that is, but it's happened. And because it's happened, I think you're going to look for flight risks elsewhere. Chip Kelly, another guy, you know, probably only held on to his job because it would have cost too much to fire him at a place that doesn't have a whole lot of money right now in UCLA. NFL background, has a lot of connections, you know, out on the East Coast. You see his name popping up for NFL OC interviews. And from what I was told, at least one prominent college OC interview. We'll see. Again, he's another guy, though, that's kind of been there, done that at the college level, and has never really been known for his recruiting chops or prowess. And wouldn't surprise me if he left UCLA. So what's this mean big picture? I don't know. I think college football has a lot of problems, and I think those problems are not what they – at the NFL, it's just a much healthier quality of life. I'd love to hear – and I think he's one of the few who actually enjoys the grind and the kind of sleepless nights that come with it, because I think he's wired that way. But, you know, 2 years from now, I'd love to get Tommy Reese on here and say, all right, what was the difference between working for Nick Saban as a college coordinator at a place with that much pressure versus being a position coach in the NFL? Because I'm sure they're completely different.
Yeah, it's I wonder if it is all just says more about BC and UCLA than it does about college football at large. And I think those two things are linked, because as the top of the sport continues to move away from everybody else, I mean, I think Notre Dame is in the top of the sport group, so they're protected. But if you're Boston College, the program goes 7-6 every year. Why would you put somebody in the hot seat because they had 1-3-9 season?
And everyone's gotten fired there. It's not like,
yeah,
no one's been there lately.
Right. It's whether it's Adazio. I mean, who like got fired because he took an interview somewhere else. It just doesn't make a lot of, you know, we opened the show talking about self-awareness with Riley Leonard. There are a hell of a lot of college football programs that have zero self-awareness. And I wonder if Boston College and UCLA are just two of those.
BC is. Yeah, BC absolutely is.
Yeah, UCLA, I didn't understand why Chip Kelly was on the hot seat at a place that in the last 25 years has had 3 10-win seasons. One of them was under Carl Durrell, and the other two were under Jim Elmora. They've won no conference championships in 25 years. What's the, you know, one Rose Bowl? Last Rose Bowl was 1998. I don't get where UCLA is like, well, Chip Kelly, proven coach, you're on the hot seat. I think it's more
mutual than it is.
Yeah, maybe Chip Kelly's just fed up with the fact that, like, I can't do this here.
I mean, it's never really been a football school, so to speak, especially in that town. It's hard to get people to go to the Rose Bowl and fill that place up for a home game, but you see the lack of crowds there. There's a lack of interest. You just lost your great first-year defense coordinator to your crosstown rival because you couldn't afford to keep up, even though you're in the same town and going to the same conference with them. A lot of guys left that staff. Their QB's coach left to go to Oregon State. Deshaun Foster, I think, the running back's coach, just today announced
Raiders.
He's going to the NFL. So there's kind of been a mass exodus there. What's his name? Our friend, Dante Moore, said, I want to go somewhere I can get recruited and develop, or I can get coached and developed, which was a shot directly across the chest of everyone on that UCLA staff. Again, not taking everything an 18-year-old kid says publicly as gospel, but it's not a good look for them. So I just think it was, I'm with you. You look at the data and they're doing better than they've done historically, at least consistently, winning 8 games a year. But there are not a whole lot of good vibes around that program right now. You throw in the fact that they are going up a conference to the Big Ten next year. And I get the sense of like wanting new energy and, you know, a breath of fresh air, so to speak, but they kind of are who they are. That's not to say they can't be better, but I'm with you. I mean, it's not like this is some historical power that's fallen on dark times.
Yeah. I mean, it's like in the last 25 years, they finished ranked, I think, 4 times. Like that's what they are. I mean, they picked up a hell of a lot of Notre Dame transfers this winter with Rico Flores and
He went to Cal. I thought
no, Tobias Merriweather went to Cal.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, he's now playing in the ACC.
That's right.
Wiggo Flores, former Notre Dame DB, KJ Wallace is there. Ramon Henderson is there. And then Michael Carmody as a backup offensive lineman is there too. So, yeah, it's just that's where they are. I mean, you can always tell where programs fit based on the kind of transfers they get. Are you transferring up or are you transferring down? UCLA is getting guys who are transferring down. Notre Dame is getting guys who are transferring up. So, yeah, it's just it's a weird time for the sport. I'm with you. I'd be curious to see what Reese thinks, because really he will have had three experiences: the college experience at Notre Dame, the NFL experience in college at Alabama, and now the NFL experience in the NFL in the NFL. So, yeah, it's just like the calendar that these guys keep. I don't know how you manage it and stay sane. You know, that now that Marcus Freeman is going to his third year, I'm curious if sort of he has his appreciation or perspective on that has changed in any way. I think we all sort of looked at the way he came in and like, all right, how are you going to be able to keep this up? You know, it's like, you look at photos of before and after Brian Kelly. It's like,
I don't know how you would get this information out of him, nor do I know the appropriate way to ask it. However, you look at his 2010 mugshot versus present day or 2021 when he left Notre Dame, how much weight did that man lose in his 12 years as Notre Dame's head coach?
Yes.
Loss, not gain, and probably a lot of it's stress, but like, yeah, it's very noticeable.
Yeah, it's there's a lot there. I guess, you know, I think Marcus Freeman's workout routine may just be kind of self-preservation more than anything, because like it's the job is a marathon and a sprint at the same time every day. And you have to, it takes a lot out of you. I don't know how he manages that, but I don't really know how any college coach manages that these days. And if you're a head coach, you're making
right
a ludicrous amount of money for an assistant. You just got to sort of hang on for dear life.
Well, he's young, not too far removed from his playing days. He already had six kids, so it's not like his life was stress-free before he got to Notre Dame. But certainly there are challenges with that. The other part of it, and this goes back to the BC thing I want to mention, I do think it's more of like BC in this context is not a little guy, because they're in the ACC, they're in a power conference. However, they're kind of the worst of those power conference schools. Kalen DeBoer takes over Alabama, hires Kane Womack, head coach from South Alabama, to come be his DC, hires Mo Linguist, head coach at Buffalo, to come as his DB's coach at Alabama. Those are the ones where you look at the separation, the Big Ten, the SEC with their own little alliance thingy going on. Third-year head coach at Buffalo, you'd rather go be a position coach at Alabama. And you know what? That sounds crazy on the surface. You look at it, you do a good job as a position coach at Alabama, you're going to be a head coach and restart your clock somewhere better than the MAC. So it makes sense. Sean Lewis, living proof of that, basically getting fired by Deion Sanders halfway through the year and still getting a pretty good head coaching job at San Diego State after leaving Kent State voluntarily. So that's where I think the real kind of line of demarcation is going to come between the haves and have-nots more than NFL versus college.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good way to look at it. Because I'd be interested to sort of get, you know, even Clark Lee at Vanderbilt, friend of the show, like you're kind of in a no-win situation there. If you hire bad assistants, you have to fire them right away. If you hire good assistants, they leave for better jobs immediately. I mean, he lost, you know, Jesse Minter, who was, you know, news. He was there for a year.
I forgot he was there. Holy cow.
Yeah. He was his first DC there.
He lost. Great. I mean, can't do better than that.
No,
hired a DC at Vandy,
but it's like you make a mistake on your OC, you have to demote him during training camp. Right. He lost his O line coach to Wisconsin and his special teams coach to Penn State this offseason. So it's just like there's a food chain here, and if you're the bottom of it, there's just not a whole lot you can do. I mean, I think that I think there's clearly a food chain between Notre Dame and Wisconsin, between where Freeman is an old boss, Luke Fickell is. You see Notre Dame just taking Wisconsin coaches. Right. On Thursday, they should get Owen Strebig, who is a four-star offensive tackle from Wisconsin. Wisconsin never lost guys in-state before. Now they are. It's just, that's you know, one of the hidden dynamics of college football. I guess it's not that hidden, but I just find that fascinating to sort of see like where you fit in the food chain. And as much as I think we like to think that every season is sort of this new adventure, the food chain is what it is for a reason. Like it's hard to move up and down that ladder. You sort of are where you are, and you're at some of these schools, I feel like they lack the self-awareness to realize that or accept it.
I agree with that. I think until last couple of years, we were kind of in this, what's the point anymore phase of Alabama, Georgia are just going to win it every year. Or, you know, yeah. Schools like the schools that get all the five stars. I do think NIL portal, other things have kind of even the playing field among those upper tier schools, Notre Dame among them. But certainly when it comes to hiring resources and things of that nature, there are the haves and have nots. And that's getting clearer by the day.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's just that Notre Dame is, you know, we'll get into this probably next month when there's the official transfer of power from Sorbic to Bavakwa. But I think, you know, one of Sorbic's legacies, aside from Campus Crossroads, is like he maintained Notre Dame's seat at the table at a time when I don't think it was automatic that it was going to be maintained. There was Notre Dame, well, it was good under Brian Kelly. It wasn't like an automatic, we have to include you in every conversation or even let you set the agenda for the conversation, which is what happened with the college football playoff. So, you know, I give Notre Dame credit for keeping that, you know, relevancy is overdone and cliche, but I think Notre Dame managed to sort of stay in that lead group as the sport separates and lead group pulls away. Notre Dame positioned itself to be in the group that is pulling away with it. So that I think is very significant. It allows you to have your coordinators on 4-year contracts and pay your recruiting staff more and all that kind of stuff. So it's a spot where I think Notre Dame is in the sport may be in an unhealthy position, but I think Notre Dame is in a healthy small subset of programs within it.
Agree completely. You look at most of the commissioners now outside of Sankey, they all came from, or outside of Jim Phillips, they all came from different backgrounds, not traditional backgrounds. Sorbrick was like that as an AD, and I think was kind of viewed as an outside the box hire at the time. But when you're the AD at Notre Dame, you're essentially a conference commissioner of a conference of one, and you need to manage up and you need to be aware of the trend lines going on throughout the country. And I think that's worked to Notre Dame's benefit extremely well.
Yeah. Well, we will have more access to Notre Dame athletes on Friday. And then I think we're still awaiting sort of the announcement of spring practice, when that will start up, when we'll get to sit down with Mike Denbrock at some point. He would be a great podcast guest as well, I think.
He would be a good podcast
guest. Yeah. Or a Meeting for Beers kind of podcast guest. But we will, we'll be getting some more guests lined up, hopefully, as the offseason continues on, as football gets started back up with winter workouts and spring practices around the corner, all that good stuff here. So plenty to discuss.
Super Bowl hot takes.
Ooh.
Aren't you a Niners fan? Did you like sneakily drop that on the pod?
I mean, you
can't be a Lions fan after last week.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned this on another podcast, but when I sat down with Joe Montana, in Ireland before the season, at the end, because it's freaking Joe Montana, I was like, hey, I have to let you know, like, I grew up a big Niners fan. And he's like, where are you from? And I was like, Michigan. And he's like, how'd you get to be a Niners fan? And I was like, because the Lions were terrible. And so I did, when I was watching San Francisco, Detroit the other weekend, it did feel like a bit of my childhood was playing out right in front of me. But that was very fun to watch. But yeah, the Niners are a fun team. But look, I am in a home with a teenage girl and a 10-year-old boy. So you got Taylor Swift and Patrick Mahomes. It's a tough combination to beat. So I think I will have to like at least outwardly pull for the Chiefs on Sunday, because that would make both of my kids very happy.
Any prop bets? You're gonna let your $10.
No, I'm still riding my Ben Skoranek one catch from 2 years ago. I don't. Maybe is there a Drew Tranquil? There's got to be a Drew Tranquil prop bet around, right?
There should be, right? Tranquil versus Aaron Banks, I think, are the only two remaining.
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna Aaron Banks holding or no holding. I don't think that's a prop bet, but there's got to be a Drew Tranquil tackles prop bet. I'm gonna have to look that up and at least put, at least find a $5 that I can put on that on DraftKings or whatever we're using these days. You, anything for this weekend?
No plans. I did do exact score. And not saying I think this will happen, but there's a reason behind it. I did exact score, Chiefs 31, Niners 21. I think that's at plus 15,000. And I bring that up because I don't know if you saw it going around. It went viral this week on Hard Knocks. Mecole Hardman was back in August, was on the Jets, and he got asked by the magician Oz the Mentalist for his Super Bowl prediction. And he said something to the effect of my team will beat the 49ers 31-21. Obviously, his team is now the Chiefs and not the Jets. Oz the Mentalist, of course, pulls something out that says, oh, that's what I have too. I bring that up because Oz the Mentalist got his start at my dad's restaurant, working for free, essentially, when he was an unknown magician way back when. So anyway, that's like my little like sentimental way of maybe him paying it forward and giving me a hell of a lot of money if that 15,000-1 prop bet somehow hits.
I opened up FanDuel just to see the player props. All I see is Mahomes, Purdy, Kelsey, Debo Samuel, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk.
You can absolutely find something, Tranquil.
McCaffrey, sure. Pacheco. I know we have a very dedicated listener of The Independent who will hear this and immediately text both of us. Here are the odds for Drew Tranquil's, or what
he
the
may or may not be located where the Super Bowl is being played.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he'll be in attendance, but who knows?
I do have one semi Super Bowl related funny story. Monday, my youngest daughter's first birthday, we go out to breakfast. Who do we see sitting alone in the corner? And I knew it was him, one, because I knew he lived in the neighborhood, even though I'd never seen him, two, because he was wearing an awesome, probably game worn throwback white sweater with a Buffalo Bills helmet on it, Marv Levy. 98 years old, all by himself.
I was gonna say Brian Pulliam.
I did not get to ask him about the Pulliam family, but he gets up. He has a walker, but he's by himself, walks by. I got to say something. I just, hey, coach, what do you think of the Super Bowl being in Vegas? But you never thought you'd see the day that happens. He goes, oh, I know. It's, sometimes changes for the better, though, but I'll happily watch it on TV. I got a better view at home. I said, yeah, you and me both. And he turns around to my two kids, one-year-old and five-year-old, two girls. And he goes, hey, watch the calories with these two. And then he walks away. So Marv Levy fat shaming my two daughters, which, as my friends who are Bills fans point out to me, is in no way, shape, or form anything remotely close to the most offensive thing a Bills coach has said within the last year, Sean McDermott. But it was a funny story to tell. The waitress comes over and she goes, oh, he's the best. He's in here every week. We always try to open the door for him. He doesn't want any help whatsoever. And I'm just like, man, 98, and you're still going at it just like that. So, pretty awesome. Him.
That's fantastic. All right. On that note, there will be no story that will top the Marv Levy anecdote. So we'll wrap up there.
Go Chiefs 31-21 and only 31-21. I think the Niners are actually going to win that.
Maybe I'll go find a correct score. Chiefs win by 8 or 7 or something like that, and see what kind of trouble I can get into with that. So, but on that note, we will wrap up this episode of The Independent. We'll be back sometime in the next couple of weeks, hopefully with a guest to chat a little bit about all things Notre Dame, because there's always plenty going on. It's one of the beauties of the college football calendar these days, even if coaches, it's driving them to the NFL. So on that note, he's Matt, I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Independent.